You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD. Joined this week by Nicole and Chris, who we can call Chris this week, because there's no Triplett, it is McFeely that's here. How are y'all doing today?
Pretty good.
Yeah. It is Fanboy versus Zombie Jesus. As we are recording this.
Died for your sins.
This is Eastern Sunday. Yep. Triplett's not here. He decided to celebrate the holiday, so he's with family. Nicole, you were going to, right? But you had to.
No, my work decided to say, you know what? You have no life. You belong to us. So you got to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. The rest of my family went to a neighboring state, went to Wyoming to go celebrate, and I missed the carpool by a half hour.
Ah, crap. So, Wyoming.
So now you guys get a look at my ugly mug for the next 2 hours.
Oh, whatever. So, this will be an interesting show, probably kind of brief, so... Not our fault, per se, just not a lot of stuff came out, so... We're gonna talk Booster on Smallville at the end of the show. Nicole didn't get to see that, unfortunately, but McFeely and I
haven't watched Smallville since they got rid of Lex.
Well, neither have I, but I still watch this one because Booster.
On Jeff Jones. Booster Jeff Gold.
Well, no, it's more because it was Jeff Jones.
Yeah, and I guess there was mixed reviews. I still have not seen his previous episode, the one that he did for the Justice League.
No, I saw the Justice Society, but I didn't see the Legion episode. I meant to watch the Legion episode, but I didn't when it happened, and I've never bothered myself to go back.
Yeah, I need to go back and watch those. So anyway, but we'll talk about that.
That's
end
later.
Of the show.
Because there aren't enough comics out to have something to talk about at the end of the show. That's what we're reduced to.
Not enough crossover.
We were
anyway.
Waiting for Brightest Day, but they decided to hit it off.
Yeah,
a week.
Yeah. What happened with that?
Apologies for that last week, folks. Me sitting there tooting away at the end of the show, going, "Yeah, next week, totally." Because it should have been bi-weekly, but I don't think it's late or anything. But I think they've just actively decided to ship the final issues of Jan Lost and Brightest Day on the same week, which is next week.
So, yeah,
that's going to be a heavy shipment just between those two.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be top of the week next week, I think.
Well, and we've got Free Comic Book Day coming up too, right?
That's the week
May
after,
7th.
Isn't it?
It's the day after, isn't it? Because what this is?
No, next week is the
May 7th.
May 1st.
So it's not this
May 1st
Saturday.
Is Free Comic Book Day, isn't it?
I thought it was.
No, I think it's the 7th. 7th.
No, yeah. Is it? Let me check my comic calendar.
Let me check the internet.
No, you're right. It's the 7th, so that'll
be. Should have betted on it.
But it will be It'll be our last show before Free Comic Book.
No, we've still got another show. Next week's our another.
We'll have a show next
week.
Sunday on the 2nd, and it'll be Free Comic Book Day the week after.
Correct. It'll be on Saturday. So next Sunday will be our last show before Free Comic Book Day. Correct.
Free
you know
Comic
what?
Day
this is our last
day.
Show before.
May.
It's our last show before I go to see Thor tomorrow night.
Wait. Shh. I hear that buzzing again. What was that? Getting feedback from you.
See? Okay. So, suck it, McFeely.
You
know?
You were bitching about Doctor Who.
Yeah, and you get to watch, like, Paul and Thor and stuff before us. So, suck it, McFeely.
That's Hey, Kenneth Branagh is Irish. He made that, so it's Irish.
Anyway. So, yes. And we may have... I don't know about you, McFeely, but maybe I'll have some Free Comic Book Day comics I can talk about next week.
I may
week.
Have one or two.
So, we'll see.
Just a brief rundown of the Free Comic Book Day comics. Marvel's Free Comic Book Day offering. A brand new Dan Slott and Umberto Ramos Spider-Man. DC's Free Comic Book Day offering. A reprint of the second part of a 3-year-old Green Lantern story.
Wow. What?
It's got a few preview pages of Flashpoint in the back, but Jesus.
What? Really?
Yes, really.
Like, what?
Like, it's the it's a reprint of the second part of Secret Origin. I mean, obviously movie tie-in, but it's like you could have written something new.
I really want to love DC. They did the $2.99 thing, and then they cheap out every once in a while. It's like, what? Why? Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
But this is what they do on Free Comic Book Day. I don't know. What was last year's Free Comic Book Day offering from them?
I have no idea.
I remember last year's was it with Marvel, was an Iron Man, and no, it was an Avengers. I want to say last year's might have been a Blackest Night preview from DC, but again, I don't remember if it was new or old or a reprint.
I've been out of town the last two Free Comic Book Days. So.
I don't even know if the Flashpoint pages that are in this Free Comic Book Day are like a real, like, original preview, or if they're just the first couple of pages of Flashpoint number one. I genuinely don't know. And I'm inclined to think the latter. Wow. Because, yeah, I don't know. But I guess there's that to talk about.
Well, and we'll have some other stuff too, though, hopefully. So we'll see. I think my shop's trying to hook me up. So I think he was going to run that by Diamond.
It's not a hookup, is it, when it's free?
Well, but it's ahead of time because it's supposed to be on that day. But I think he's going to try to see if Diamond will let him give those to me so that I can preview them on the show. I don't know. That he's going to run it by. If I don't have them, I won't have them. McFeely, get you. If it's not cool, I won't have it. I'm not going to do anything illegal.
I should hope not, Sonny Jim, boy, no, buddy boy. The reason anybody... I know that that's the content of those comics is because I've received them already, but I've set them aside and haven't even looked at them myself.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Maybe you can preview. If I can't, I can't. It'll be nice for our listeners to have a preview of what's in those comics, you know. Anyway. Other news.
Anyway.
Other news.
Spider-Man?
Spider-Man is dying! Yeah, whatever.
He's been dying for the past
year. I tweeted this week. So if you're following us on Twitter, by the way, you should follow the show on Twitter, @FanboyVS. And like I said, I'm using it to occasionally tweet out news. Good example of something that happened this week. We got a tweet out this week talking about, from Marvel, talking about, you know, new Spider-Man costume. And
it's a nice costume, too.
Yeah, and it's a really nice costume. But
not bad.
The sense of when you read the article and look at it, it's the same BS that they pulled with this death of Spider-Man to begin with. It's Ultimate, people.
Yeah.
That's the Ultimate Spider-Man that's getting a new Spider-Man.
Look, everybody. It's the new costume for Spider-Man. Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You can hear the imaginary crowd reacting to the way the news unfolds. It's not like I'm ripping on Ultimate Spider-Man because I buy and enjoy the book, but
it just
guys,
doesn't...
nobody cares really. I don't believe it. You know, they're saying that. One of the pieces of info that we did get from this article, in addition to the new costume reveal, was that they're saying this is not Peter Parker under the costume. I don't believe them.
They're doing the Clone Saga.
I directly accuse them of lying to me.
It's the Clone Saga. That's what it is. Ben Reilly.
Ben Reilly already exists in the Ultimate Universe. He is black and a normal person.
Why does that not surprise me? Or something like that. I don't know. But why would they lie, though? For publicity.
Maybe they're not directly lying, but I still don't believe he's going to die.
He might be injured. I mean, he might be doing like a Batman.
Well,
like
we've already run through all the possibilities here. It's a figurative death. He retires the identity. He maybe has to give it up for some reason. Maybe somebody else takes it over from him. I saw some interesting speculation, like maybe Johnny Storm could take over the identity because he's living with him. He's right there to do it. It would provide an ironic parallel with what's happened in the mainstream Marvel Universe. That is at least what appears to be a dude in the costume, according to the picture. So
yeah, I did try to look at that. I was like, I do not see breasts. So,
I mean, I just remember the last time they run around saying that's not Spidey in the costume, which was the Mackie Byrne reboot of Spidey around 2000, 2001, when Matty Franklin was standing in for Spider-Man. There were no knockers in effect, but that's only because she was underage.
Ah, well, there you go. So I don't know, but I mean, it was
Does that really stop them from being comic book females?
Well, unfortunately, it's sort of like required by comic book law that, you know, comic book females have at least C cup breasts for some reason.
Sometimes it's the only way you can tell if they're young or not.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. So apparently women in comics don't have like a range of breast sizes. You know, it's only like C and above.
So, anyway, we're getting into it.
Yeah. So.
Pull it back.
Anyway, like I said, I tweeted that earlier. It's just I'm tired of the smoke and mirrors thing that they're trying to pull with this Spider-Man thing. It's Ultimate Spider-Man. Nobody cares. Some people care, but the people that care know. And it's like you're not gonna pull anybody else in by.
I don't think we've talked about it, but it's also been confirmed that the death issue 160, the final part of the storyline, is going to ship polybagged as well. So we can probably expect the news to be blown in the mainstream media the night before.
I assume it'll be on Marvel.com that morning. So
yeah,
I'm not even worried about it. I don't want to seem flippant because it's just like I just don't read this comic, so I'm not that interested in it. But I'm sure some people are, and I'm sure it's going to be a fine story, you know, because Bendis usually writes good stuff, and usually, well. We're going to talk about why Bendis may not be a liar, but he's an asshole. Sorry. Anyway, we'll talk about that later in Avengers 12. That'll be an interesting story. Anyway, other news.
What the hell else happened this week? There was some stuff, but very little of it.
A couple of movie things, I think, maybe, or...
What did we get? Well, there was a new Green Lantern TV spot, but I didn't really take away anything major to talk about from it. We saw it give us a better look at Parallax.
Yeah, that was about it. Nice shot of Parallax, though.
There was one other thing. I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, well, one that jumped out at me was that Neil Adams is going to be returning to the Avengers very briefly with issue 16.1.
16? I thought it was 12.
16.1. No, I beg your pardon. New Avengers 16.1.
New Avengers 16.1. Okay, yeah. Because the next Avengers is 12.
Avengers is having a 0.1 already, so not that that would stop them at this point. But yes, so that's happening. I don't think we really know anything about it, just that it's happening. It's pretty cool. They're saying it's going to be about the return of Osborn. So they probably completely managed to disregard the excellent Osborn miniseries.
He's been back in Osborn for several issues. Yeah, I hope they don't disregard it. I mean, I don't know. Kelly Sue seemed to think it sounded cool, but I don't know. I guess they have to assume that some people haven't read it. Hopefully it'll take it into account at least that he came back from there. But it looks like that the ending of that Osborn is that, you know, he's actually escaping.
Yeah,
and is going to be free. So,
if that's picking up on that, it'll be interesting enough. The Neil Adams artwork is enough of a lure, I think. Frankly, he's one of those guys from older days who was really still got it. So, I will look forward to seeing that. You know, it's like sometimes you see old artists come back and it's a big trumpet, but it's like they haven't moved or evolved with the times, and their work just it's more of a nostalgia trip than anything else, which is a fine thing in and of itself, but like Neil Adams has still got it, so that's going to be awesome.
I know. I feel so bad because it's like I'm not really I wasn't around for like Neil Adams artwork previously, but the only way I know him is through skepticism, because one of my other hobbies is skepticism, and all I know is that he believes in Hollow Earth, and that just kills me. I just can't get past that. But whatever, if he draws good stuff, who cares? Look that up, kids. Hollow Earth. Anyway, so, but no, I think that'll be good. McFeely hates me for that. But anyway. Anything else
Separate
interesting?
Separate the creator from their work.
Do what?
Separate the creator from their work.
Oh, no, no, and that's why I said he does great work. I just, every time I hear his name, all I can think is Hollow Earth, and it just, okay. But anyway. Moving on, what other news we got?
I don't know. I got nothing else. That's all it? I got. I did not see anything. I got the news that I'm seeing Thor tomorrow. That's the news.
Yes, we're all very excited that you're seeing Thor tomorrow. Actually, we are excited. I'm looking forward to seeing what you think, and you can tell us about it. you know, next week.
Well, obviously, it'll not be. I mean, it's proper. It's actually properly released on the Wednesday. I'm going to a preview tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
But it's what next? It's not next. It's next. It's the week after, isn't it, for you guys?
Is it on my Marvel calendar?
Yeah, it's.
I'm sure it must be.
It's on the 6th.
Yeah, it's on my Marvel calendar.
Well, that's Friday, so that's like 2 full weeks away. Yeah. Well, yes, we'll talk about it that weekend show then. Not next week's show, but the week after.
Yeah. Because I won't make it.
Discussion.
Are you only going to go see it the one time?
Me? Well, it depends how often it is.
When I'm going to go see that. I may end up going to see it even Sunday morning, so the morning before the show. We'll see.
You need to see it before the show, otherwise you'll be ostracized and judged and pointed at.
I know.
I'll be at work before the show, so I couldn't do that.
Right. But you've got 2 other days in there to catch it. So.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we'll talk reviews.
That's about it.
I'm gonna go first, I guess. Get my crap out of the way.
Crap? You think it's crap? Oh no.
No, it's not crap. Well, some of it's crap. Some of it's crap, some of it's good. I'll talk about what's good first. What is good is Twilight Guardian. Yeah. So if you don't remember, Twilight Guardian, Troy Hickman, awesome guy. We interviewed him for the show. I talked to him, didn't I? I think that was it. It was just me.
Yeah.
Just but, you. Really cool guy. Really enjoyed sitting down with him. I think I might try to do it again now that all 4 issues are out. I think it's been confirmed that this is going to get a trade. I don't know if you know that or not, McFeely. Or if
I don't know offhand, but I wouldn't be surprised.
So I'm hoping this is going to get a trade. Hopefully the trade will get some traction as well. As it is, this is the final of the 4 parts, so hopefully they will make it into an ongoing or something, but I don't think that news has come out just yet. So, we left our hero last time, as I left the cliffhanger for last time. Last time, of course, she had gotten offered to have her likeness used at a comic, but none of them were really quite her style. So she wasn't really very interested in doing that. But when she came home, she noticed her house had sort of been broken into. And who had shown up but her father. Yes, her long-lost father. Supposedly has some sort of dark past. You know, her mother said it was because she thought that they thought that he was killing people or hurting people. But you know, she ends up deciding to sit down and talk it out with him. Come to find out, he was a comic book artist and a comic book writer. And he, I guess by other people's standards, sort of went off the deep end because he became very interested in, and Kilby will love this, Ayn Rand and objectivism. And so he actually wrote a superhero with an objectivist point of view, and apparently got himself into some trouble doing that, and had to go into hiding.
So, is this guy supposed to be a parody of Steve Ditko then? That's a serious question, because Steve Ditko is an objectivist, and he created a superhero based on objectivism, and he's a bit of a reckless.
Could be. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, if that's sort of the template. You know, I don't know firsthand, but that would probably be so. So she ends up talking to him, and he gives him her number, and she decides to go out on patrol that night. And before she goes, she finds one of his comics. It was written under a pen name, which is why she didn't know it was him. The character's name? I'm sorry?
What's his name? What's the character's name?
The character's name, her father's name, I don't remember if she gives it. I don't see it right here. I don't know that she actually says what his name is. So much of this is her point of view. I don't even know if the pen name is on here.
I'm just curious because I'm interested in exploring the Steve Ditko parallels now.
Yeah, that's interesting. We may have to look at that a little bit. I don't think it says it on here. Let me see if on the comic cover it says. No, it doesn't. But the comic character is called the Gulch, and in it he fights the Leech, and it is very, heavy, objectivist, language, like this bad guy is trying to take money from all the rich people and then keep the poor people down by just giving them enough to satisfy them and keep them under his control. And it's written, it's all black and white. It's if you're really familiar with objectivism, it's really kind of interesting to see. So our hero, she goes out on patrol, and she's thinking about all the things that her mother had said, whether or not she believes the thing her father had said, because, you know, her mother had said sort of something different, and it's opened up this whole new world of, you know, family secrets and possibilities for her. And while she's out on patrol, there's a couple issues earlier where, like, she had gone to a house and she saw some of the Christmas lights were, like, loose, and she left a note, but she had forgotten to call the fire marshal. Well, that house is on fire. So she kicks some ass. She calls the police department. She breaks down the door, runs in with her cat, and they rescue the people inside. But as she's coming out, she realizes the cat got left inside. So she goes running in after the cat just as the house collapses. So this beautiful one-page panel, I don't know if you can see that or not, of like the house coming down. So really nice art in this issue.
On screen.
So
yeah.
It's the other
wrong
one for
screen.
Y'all. This is sorry.
Wrong screen.
There's screen and there's the live screen. So the live people got to see that. Sorry, I used two.
Cameras, oh, okay.
So it's
selfish.
A little confused. Selfish. Sorry. So if the people on the stream can see it. Anyway, but she manages to escape outside a back window, as does the cat. So she's now contemplating this new hero role for her. And lo and behold, she is finally confronted by the Dusk Devil. Real guy, so that answers any questions about whether or not it was her before. Guy in a red hood with a devil's t-shirt on, wearing a mask. And he seems to be like almost gesturing her, like asking if she's okay or not. But she knows it's him, and she lays him out and calls the police. And then leaves, so... which
not a hero, ladies and gentlemen.
It's still sort of, I mean, it's interesting because it's still, there's still like a question was like, maybe this was just a dude because it was Halloween. So like this all takes place on Halloween night.
That's
so
weird that they're doing Halloween and it's May.
Well, yeah, for the setting,
whatever
we're at. Yeah, it was May in 2010. So, and again, all this is done from like her files. So, you know, it could have been a perspective earlier time, but I like how the series ended up. I mean, there's obviously a lot of questions. There's a lot more to explore with this character. There's a lot to see her grow into and grow to do. I mean, this is really like her first sort of heroic action, you know, this really is like saving all these people, you know, saving people from a burning house. I mean, that's pretty real. So I think it's, I would love to see this get, you know, turned into a full series and everything. So, and
so
it's
this
just,
is the last issue?
Yeah, it was the last in the four parts. So this was the pilot scene, you know, and kind of going back again. This was the pilot season winner. Basically, that means that you get a series out of it, which is essentially what this is. This is that four-part series that you get for winning it out of Top Cow. And now Top Cow has the option of whether or not they want to option it to, you know, a full comic or not. So definitely contact Top Cow. Let them know you want more Twilight Guardian. This is good stuff. This is what comics should be. It's a wonderful blend of art, story, interest, dialogue. I mean, all those elements are there. Not to mention, like I said, just the flashback, the sort of parody comics and flashback comics. I think it's a real homage to good comics. And I would love, you know, to see it. I'm all about, you know, having
that
really interesting
thing sounds more and more plausible, doesn't it?
Do what? Ditko
the
thing?
Ditko
I think.
Aspect.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the case. So I hope Brian, I would love to see Brian pick this up and read it just for the objectivism stuff. Brian's really into Rand. And he tries to get me into it. And I'm, you know, I've read up on it. I'm not as into it as he is, but it is sort of interesting to see that in print. And that's what I want to talk to Troy again too, because I'm interested to see what his perspective is on it. But he's on Twitter now too. Troy Hickman at Troy_Hickman is on Twitter now as well. I want to think that I had maybe just a little bit to do with that. So, because I wrote him pretty hard about getting on Twitter.
Pat yourself on the back there.
I probably didn't, but I would like to say that I did. So, anyway. So, Twilight Guardian, pick it up. Tell Top Cow you want more. The trade's going to be coming out. If you didn't get to read the series, please, for the love of God, pick up the trade. It is well worth your time. So, on to other things. War of the Green Lanterns continues to rage on. And it gets more ridiculous.
Well, it's more like a gentle spat, really.
Yeah, it's really sort of... I mean, really, at this point, Kronos has won. It's just a matter of can they, like, beat him back? So, because at this point, Kronos pretty much runs Oa. He's got pretty much all the Green Lanterns other than Guy, Kyle, Hal, and John. So,
what an amazing coincidence!
Yeah, he took Kilowog back over, put Kilowog's ring back over, back on him, and now he has control of Kilowog as well. So when we left our heroes, Hal and Guy, they were trapped on the greenhouse planet, as they called it, which was a nice planet. Lo and behold, now this is something that really, what's the word? Pisses me off. That's the word I'm looking for. I cannot stand having something that is not previously mentioned, not established, magically placed where you need it in order to further your story without any previous context for it. So the whole idea is that they were supposed to come to this planet to be a safe house if, you know, shit went down. And magically, Hal has had a big freaking jet plane installed in the place. So that in case he needed a ship, you know, he would have one. So it's just like, really? Really? Like, you're just gonna throw a jet in there, you know? Because they happen to need one, and there it is. It's just, no, that's bad. That's bad story writing. I'm sorry. So, but anyway, lo and behold, their magic ship is here. And they use it to fly to Oa, and then it's destroyed. Really? Okay. So, one trip for that
thing. Handy thing there.
Yeah. Anyway, so Hal and them escape, but then we're building. So anyway, they manage to escape, get back to Oa, and now the four now non-powered lanterns have met up. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do. Now, one thing that they do have is the rings from the other lanterns, right? Because they had, Hal had, he took the rings from the other core, the other leaders of the cores, and he has their rings. So his brilliant idea is they're going to use the power rings from the other cores in order to fight all of Oa.
I got to tell you, these rings, more and more, it seems like every time there's a big Green Lantern thing, that they, rather than actually use these rings, like just rather than just use the damn things and have the people that own them use them, they use them at every turn to create more DC Direct action figure concepts.
It does seem that way, doesn't it? It does seem that way.
Tell us what happens here, JD.
Well, because what happens is they each choose a ring, and there's even a homophobic moment, which is kind of terrible. Because, of course, the
to be
the
fair,
ring,
that's totally Guy.
Yeah, it is, but it's still... And because, hey, none of the others... Hey, here's the thing that pisses me off. None of the others chose that ring, of which Kyle would have been perfect for it. And it's the only ring of the set, other than the yellow ring, that has power on its own. And that becomes a plot point later because... So they end up, Kyle chooses blue, Guy chooses red because, duh, he's already used red.
Yeah.
I mean, he basically is red. Hal takes yellow, and that leaves John... Indigo, because they decide he can't use the only other, he tries to take Avarice, but it's like, really? No, that would not work.
It's just one of those situations where it's like, you know, we got to pigeonhole you guys into one of seven neat categories, and this is the one that is least objectionable. Now use this Ring of Compassion to form a machine gun.
Yes, which he can't even do that, and that becomes the whole thing, because Kyle takes blue. Kyle takes Hope. Well, Hope only works when in the presence of other Green Lanterns, and the Green Lanterns are not the people he wants to supercharge. So why would he take Blue? Why wouldn't he take, you know, the Sapphire? Because that ring actually does stuff. But whatever. No, he doesn't take it. He takes Hope. Because he's got hope more than love. Really?
Well.
How much? I mean, come on. Okay, yeah, he has hope.
Kyle's had a lot of crap slung at him, and he's made his way through it constantly.
Yes, but he's also
optimistic.
He's also one of the cornerstones of that character.
Yeah, going to see him Saronic, so you know, I mean, love would have worked for him too.
I think love would have worked.
You really want to see Kyle Rayner all stripped down in a spangly pink metal bikini? Nicole?
Do I have to answer that question?
Well, I'm sorry, I was reading the chat.
I was only joking anyway.
Do I have to answer that question?
I was reading the chat, sorry.
Anyway, so we have our, now we have our super-powered now team of four fully able to, you know, be sold to kids, toys, version of Lanterns.
It looks like it's some nice art there, though.
Oh, it's a nice. I mean, it's a nice panel.
Consistently good art. Yeah.
Yeah. No. It's good stuff. But it's just kind of like, okay, great.
Rather uneventful issue.
Huh?
A very uneventful chapter.
Pretty,
in the story.
Pretty much, other than the dissemination of the rings.
Yeah, but then, like, I remember ultimately, let's not forget that this came out on the same week as Green Lantern Corps. If you hold up its cover there, it's aiding.
Yeah, I know. And if you didn't... Well, and that's the thing, too. The cover for Green Lantern shows Hal with, like, the yellow... with, like, the Sinestro core, which doesn't happen.
That's a deceptive Silver Age-y kind of cover.
Correct. Yes, now, the next cover shows...
Just blows the end.
Yeah, pretty much blows the end of the previous one, which came out in the same week.
Which would be one thing if they'd actually come out on separate weeks, which I imagine must have been the plan at some point, but the schedule blew. So, you know...
That really sucks.
Yeah, so I knew what was going to happen at the end of...
Exactly the same thing that happened to me and to, I imagine, a lot of readers with Blackest Night number 6, because you remember Blackest Night was the book that came out on the last week of the year, and it was the only comic that came out that week. Just the diamond, just that the companies were taking a skip week, and Blackest Night was the only comic that came out that week. So if you didn't get it that week, if you didn't make your trek to get one book, which was the issue in which all 6 other DC heroes and villains got the rings, and that was what the whole issue was about, there was very little chance you didn't see the house ad on the internet or in the subsequent books over the next week. Mm-hmm. Which showed you that. So I saw that image on the internet, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then it picked up Blackest Night 6 the next week, and I was like, oh, the whole issue is just, I knew this already, which is exactly the sentiment I had whenever the only thing that happened that mattered in that issue of Green Lantern, I already knew the outcome of.
Yeah.
I hate it when companies do that.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's been happening way too much lately, though.
Well, and that's scheduling, so. You know, and as much as I'll complain about, say, a cover like this, where you know, with the whole Sinestro Corps, which doesn't happen in the comic at all, at least it doesn't give away what happens in the comic, per se. You know, whereas the next one does. So it's kind of like, well, maybe I don't want good cover art. You know, maybe I just want something wacky. Maybe I just want, you know, Superman, if I don't poop in 10 minutes, the whole world's going to explode, you know, or whatever.
Sorry, Jimmy, I can't help you.
those were the days.
I don't want to read that comic, I'm sorry.
or Superman raping that kid or whatever. Whatever that one was. So all the cool Sinestro Corps, well, I guess the Parallax Corps orange, Green Lantern guys, they have it kind of cool. It's like the Green Lantern logo, but it's yellow instead of white behind it. So you can tell who they are now. Anyway, one-handed Ganthet is totally getting rocked by most of the Corps. And our now four Lanterns are trying to figure out how to use their powers, which also doesn't go well. So, since, you know, like I said, I mean, John doesn't really have a good idea of how to use the Compassion Ring, of which his staff, it's awesome. His staff is like a gun like a machine gun, but it's got like the open end on it, like the like Indigo Ones had. It's kind of funny. And he's in like this total like
a machine gun of compassion.
Machine gun of compassion, yes. And he's got like a bandana on. He's total Rambo style.
He just shoots bullets made out of mercy.
Yes.
Mercy bullets.
Kanthet, at one point in here, there's some great art in here and just stuff out of this, though. I mean, like, Kanthet puts on this total, like, Roman-style armor and has, like, a mace construct that goes over his severed hand and good stuff. And then Kyle does really awesome stuff and powers up all of the Green Lanterns that they're trying to fight. Yeah. Anyway, so Ganthet bitches him out for stealing the rings, because he's like, okay, this was a really dumb idea, because first of all, guy's probably going to die, and you don't know how to use these rings, so you don't know what you're doing, and that pretty much is just build up to what we were all waiting for, which is Mogo!
Did we lose him?
No, right here. Mogo shows up, and he has been taken over by Parallax. Yeah. So imagine an entire planet. Yeah. No way you're going to fight.
Wow.
That. Yeah. Anyway.
I think Mogo turning up or having something done to him has always got to be... Well, maybe not specifically Mogo, but a planet appearing in the sky overhead is a requisite cliffhanger moment for any Geoff Johns written major Green Lantern crossover event.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean... If you got a planet lantern, I mean, what are you going to do? So, anyway. I'd say this is slow going, though. I mean, I'm still kind of... It doesn't seem like a lot... I mean, things are happening, but it's nothing like that's just really got me at the edge of my seat, I guess.
It sounds like it's one of those that will read better in trade.
Maybe.
Big
I
trade.
So. It's going to be Maybe. A huge trade. I mean, however many parts it ends up being. But it's just not...
Well, I don't know. It's the, this is the second month, so we'll get six, and I think it's... I want to say it's 10 parts long.
Wow. So, another 2 months, I guess. It's
well,
just...
The next month, and then Green Lantern.
Although there was the variant cover, I guess, of... Is it Green Lantern Core 60?
Not sure.
It was released. May have been spoilers. I'm hoping it's spoilers.
Don't know. Didn't see it.
Yeah, because on the cover it shows Guy and John and Hal, their rings in the air.
No Doing Kyle. What?
Just get their rings in the air. But it's just that Kyle wasn't there.
Oh, that's right. We're expecting a death, aren't we? Yes. Mm.
Well, they were mentioning it in the chat. HMRC says, well, if Kyle supercharges all the infected Green Lanterns enough, maybe he can drown the impurity?
Yeah, and there was some mention of that. I mean, there's some of like him trying to contact them and get them to break through their control. But I think he's just going to die. That would be awesome. Anyway, and
so
Brian...
So Kyle,
he'll be
you think is...
you forever and ever.
Yep. Well, Kyle...
So you think Kyle's going to bite at him?
I mean, Kyle... I think Kyle's the best bet. I mean, Emerald Warriors is doing well. You know, John needs
it's
a vehicle.
Not have anything against Kyle. It's just that Hal's not dying. Guy's fun and interesting. And John, I mean this in the best possible way, John is black.
Yeah.
And that leaves Kyle.
Yeah. And they've, and DC has caught so much hell
for killing
off minorities
in the last couple of months.
So. They, I mean, and I understand trimming it down.
It's a
because,
horrible way to have to approach analysis and analyzing the situation. Don't get me wrong. That's not the first thought that went through my head.
No.
It's just recent precedent and response to it makes me think in this direction.
But they need some way. They needed some way to revamp interest, I think, in Core. And there's not enough pages in Core for both Kyle and John. And so it's like, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to, you know, send John to the background again and then just get as much bad press because you're not covering John and you're covering Kyle? Or, you know, make it interesting, kill off Kyle, and then you've got plenty of room to explore all the interesting stuff.
So who do you think they're
going
to bring in to replace him?
Oh, they won't. They won't replace him.
There's enough damn Green Lanterns.
Yeah, they're not hurting for Green Lanterns.
Yeah. And, well, they focus on then.
Yeah, and there was, I mean, there was three Green Lanterns for a long time. For a long time it was just Guy, John, and Hal. So, you know, and
then For a long time it was just Hal.
Yeah, for a long time it was just Hal.
Yeah.
For a long time it was just Kyle, you know. It's okay to just have one, kids. Yeah.
No, but no, we have to have...
make out that way, all right.
Right. But we have to have...
just special.
But, you know, like I said, they've spun off Emerald Warriors, and I think that's got a pretty loyal following now, so... and I don't think they want to drop Core either, but it's hard to have that with two different characters, so... Because it just ended up where John was just coming in to save Kyle, and, well, Kyle's boring. I said it. Kyle's boring.
Screaming in the distance.
I know. Kilby's going to hate me so much. But I'm sorry. He's boring, right? He was interesting and cool. And then just now that Hal's back, we don't need him.
Let's tune in next week when we get a new host.
Right.
Because you're fired, JD.
He's not going to fire me. He can't fire me. He didn't pay me. Brian starts paying me, then he can fire me. That's... So, anyway. See, HMRC says, Hal is boring. No, Kyle's boring. Hal's boring. Anyway, okay.
Kyle is boring.
No, he's not. He's kind of awesome.
What is Hal Jordan's personality?
He's fearless.
Now, please describe me. No, that is a personality that is entirely defined by things around him rather than anything he himself is or does.
He's...
And what is fearless?
Reckless. He's his own man. I don't know. Nicole, why don't you review some comics?
Okay. Well, I'll review a couple that I got this week. I'll start off with The Fear Itself Sins Past. I picked up this one because I really don't know a whole lot about Captain America outside the cartoons.
I think you're good then. I think you probably know a lot.
So this is one reason why I picked this up, because I wanted to get a little bit of a history of Captain America. This is actually three and a half issue. Okay, so it's three past issues and about six pages of new stuff. So if you don't know about Captain America, this is a good place to start off with. So we're at the very beginning. We're at the Statue of Liberty, and you can see there's something going on there. Apparently, someone tried to blow off the head of Miss Liberty. Not a good thing.
Cobra!
Exactly what I thought. I'm like, this is such a Cobra operation. So, so you find out that they fail, and they only blew out one of her eyes. So, and then you see Captain trying to figure out what's going on. And then they go into a bunch of flashbacks. He's staring into the water, and all of a sudden you're going into these flashbacks. So you go back into where Red Skull has his daughter. He's not happy that it's not a son, so he tries to kill her. And, well, one of his people saves this daughter, saying, "Hey, she may not be an heir, but she's got your blood in you. She's got to be good for something." So she saves her, trains her to be this malicious warrior, nothing but hate and fear. And then he decides to do an experiment on her, which changes her from a young girl to an older teenager, which is kind of sinister to do to your own flesh and blood. So,
but necessary for plot reasons.
Yes.
Because we ain't waiting 17 years for her to grow up so we can tell stories about her.
Right.
Exactly. But it does come into play later on. And so then you go back into another past issue of where Captain America is at his little fortress, and he's doing some research, and he has a flashback of his old fiancée. And then we get another flashback of...
flashbacks within flashbacks.
Yeah, this is just a
dream within a dream within a dream.
Yeah, so you get to see a flashback of Battlestar story and Falcon story. So you can see how they met. Like I said, I'm just going to go through this real quick because it's just flashback after flashback. And then you see Captain America. He's trying to find out how he could figure out who could help him in this situation. So he finds Cersei, who... Because they're coming across this issue where a bunch of teenagers have gone missing. And so he's like, well, I need to go undercover, but I'm not going to be able to go undercover. I'm this big, brawny guy, you know. He's like, maybe I could slouch down or whatever. So he goes to Cersei, and she shrinks him into a 15-year-old. Unfortunately, it takes away his strength. It's kind of like Samson getting his haircut. He lost all his strength. So, well, he goes undercover, and he finds out what happens with these teenagers being kidnapped. And you come to find out that it is... So they could be taken to a camp under, my gosh, I just lost it. What's her name?
Mother Knight, I want to say her
name. That's it. But she's going under a different name. Yeah, so she's going under a different name right now. So they're in this camp, and it's kind of like a Hitler Youth program, where they just teach them everything evil about the world and to enjoy it, embrace it. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do anything. If they do, you kill them, basically. So, and to get these new youths, they actually torture them. So this was, I know it's a sinister of me, but I like World War II history stuff. So it kind of flashes back to that. So you get a little bit of history on that, on her background. And then you actually go to yet another flashback. Where they kind of combine the two, where you see Sin's training at this camp, where she is actually well known as the Red Skull's daughter. So no one messes with her, and she just pretty much kicks the living tar out of Captain, because, well, he doesn't have his strength. So he realizes he's vulnerable, and lo and behold, he gets his strength back, and all is well. So, it's, like I said, it's a quick issue of just a bunch of flashbacks, until you get to the very end where they're back at the Statue of Liberty, and he knows what's going on. He knows who did this, and now he's out to find Sin. So, again, it's what, my goodness.
Pretty substantial, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 65 pages.
Wow.
Yeah,
$5?
Yeah, it's $5, but again, it's
just... You get what you pay for.
Yeah, I mean, it took me a good time. I'm a pretty fast reader, but this took me a good time to read. I mean...
1980s comics, you know?
Yeah, but... So, you get... This is what's really fun about this. You actually get to see the different type of art in each one of them. You can see how it's changed. You know, here's one flash. This is the first one. But then here's the beginning of it. So you can definitely tell the difference of the drawing style. And
Who is the artist for the framing sequence for the new material?
Let's see. Stefano Landinieri? Yeah, I'd never heard of him, so...
Tell me the names. Who are the other writers and artists? Whose works
the writer
are printed
is Jimmy Can.
And then, it's not even acting.
Yeah, colorist is Chris Sotomayor, or Sotomayor. I'm not sure how you say it. Letterer is David Sharp. Writer is Mark Grunwald.
Yes, this makes this worth owning. Yes.
Yeah, like I said, it's I really can't explain a lot because it's just flashback after flashback, but it's a really good introduction. The only problem I have about this... there's a lot of thought bubbles. There's not a whole lot of speaking, but a lot of thought bubbles, especially during the 1980s. Things are like, oh, I've got to put my hand on this so I could open the door. I'm like, basically, we know we could see that in the book, but they actually had to think of it. That's the only thing that threw me off was all the thought bubbles.
Just a product of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sort of asking myself why I didn't get this now, to be honest, because I know those stories, but I only know them from reading about them rather than having read them.
It's a really good start over, and I'm glad I picked it up just so I could see a little bit more history of Captain America.
I mean, basically, if you haven't been reading Captain Brubaker's Captain America from when he relaunched it, what, 6 years ago now, you it's very unlikely a reader would know who Sin is if they haven't been reading that. So it's a solid idea for a little reprint collection.
My problem is it's called Sin's Past, but it's most of it's not even about her. I mean, she plays a major part in it because you had to have all this history to get up to her history. But overall, it's just like, it's really weird that it's named after her, but she's probably the least minor character.
Probably about the full extent of anything she ever did in that. So.
Yeah, but how can you pass on that title?
Yeah. It's really good. I mean, you get to see what happens to her at the end and how she gets the Red Skull look, you know, because before she's this cute little redhead, you know, and then she has a little accident that makes her look like her father. So, yep. So, you know, this is a good read if you don't know the history, if you've never read this before. Yeah, pick it up. It's worth the $5. It's really thick. And there's hardly any advertisements in it.
Always a plus.
Yeah. So there's that one. And the next one, I know McFeely read this one, hence why I'm wearing my pink shirt for it. I accessorize for the show, people. Nice. I'm talking about the new Tiny Titan.
Get out of the bag.
So this one is called I Like Pink Very Much, Lois. Now, if you don't know, I'm a fan of My Little Ponies, and I can tell you this seems like something that Pinkie Pie would have wrote. So, I love this series, and I have to thank McFeely for getting me into this. basically, you know, Alfred's in there doing laundry, and he asks everyone, okay, anyone have anything else? And of course, being little kids, they wait till the last minute. And so you see all the individual ones come up and hand them their outfits. And so he's getting upset. He's like, oh, okay, whatever. Is that it? And then, well, Supergirl comes in and she's like, hey, can you wash a few capes for us? And he's like, okay, whatever. But he lets a penguin do the laundry. And guess what? They had the capes go in with the regular laundry. Guess what? You don't mix red in with anything besides red. So hence, everyone has pink costumes. Now, how cute is that? I mean, everywhere from Batgirl to Robin, even Superman and Superdog, they all have pink. This is what I like. Superman wears pink and he likes it. Yeah. See, guys, it's okay to wear pink because Superman does. And then you get to Superman wearing his new pink outfit and he goes and he's in this, he's saving a helicopter. Is that what it is? Yeah. Helicopter that Lois Lane is in, but they just see this pink blur and you don't think it's Superman. They think it's Supergirl. So Supergirl's getting all this publicity saving Lois Lane. And it's just so cute. I love it. Then Superman finds out about this, and so he's like, wait. He's like, this isn't working out pretty much. And so he changes his clothes into Superboy's costume. I love it.
Man clothes.
Oh, my God.
So Superboy's like, hey, that's my costume. And of course, Supergirl's like, well, T-shirts and jeans are very fashionable.
That's a Tiny Titans running gag.
Oh, I love it.
A lot of characters have tried on Superboy's costume, and that's always the catchphrase when somebody does it.
But then it comes to my favorite part. So you see little Robin, and I don't think he's liking the pink that much. Do you? And then, so they magically appear into the best part where you could actually mix in with pink, and that is the pink aisle of the toy store.
I just love this panel of Robin screaming.
Yeah. No!
Yeah! Oh my God.
And then Plasmus is like, Plasmus colors pink. Plasmus likes pink. And then, of course, Robin's like, no, this isn't happening. This is not happening.
Do you know what I love about Tiny Titans is the way that nearly every panel is taken out of context is just fantastic.
Oh, I love it, though. It's so
fun. There are so many panels in Tiny Titans that you could turn into an internet message board avatar. Just look at that. Yay! Complete lack of contents. Robin, pink costume, girl's toy aisle, holding a lollipop, screaming, no! What is that? Awesome.
He's trying to escape, and so, nope, Cassandra's not going to let him. He is sitting there, and then he finally agrees, okay, pink's not so bad. And of course, he doesn't want to be in pink, so by the time they get back home, he's like, fine, give me the food coloring. So he goes and watches his own costume with all this food coloring, only to turn out to hippie tie-dye. Yay!
It's the Nightwing costume specifically.
Yeah, Nightwing. Oh my god.
And then he has to defend himself. He's like, hey, that's right, it's rainbow. It's a new look, and I'm sticking with it. So, and then we get to our next little story, and Lois comes over to talk to Cal. Well, he's not here. And so she's wondering why Superman is wearing pink. And she's like, I don't know. She's trying to defend herself. And so everything, okay, so then Lois gets the real story. But then the best thing is, at the end, you see Batman ending in pink.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
And then he gets upset, and then, of course, he asks, hey, where did Robin put that food coloring? So now Batman's going to be rainbowed as well. I love this. This is such a fun... It's just fun because Superman doesn't care if it's pink. He likes the idea. Batman doesn't care for it. I love Tiny Titans. Again, Chris, I have to thank you for giving into this because it's just so fun. I mean,
I speak only truth.
The thing is each one of these panels, it just puts a smile on your face because it's so sugary sweet and cute. You gotta love it.
Little moments I love that the whole issue is just built around a joke reference to a line from the Superman movie, you know? I like them very much, those. But it's like little panels like this where Supergirl is gleefully taking credit for it. Look at that big smile on her head. How adorable is that?
Well, you see, I like pink very much, Lois.
Quality.
This is so fun.
But then you get we get a revisitation of all the little running jokes as well for the older readers. It's just, you know, you got baby Damien crawling past and tossing his washing into the basket as well.
You spend the first couple pages of just everyone giving up their laundry. And you could just,
Jason, Damien, and Cassandra as well, Batgirl, but she never takes her mask off. So she's running around in the tile, but she's still got the mask off.
Oh my God.
Which is why it doesn't turn pink.
I just like the different expressions as with Alfred as you go with each kid. So it's just like, okay, whatever. You know? So. It's just so cute. I love it.
Well, they're just like really simplistic and then very expressive artwork as well. In the basket, please.
Of course, he gets bombarded with capes because everyone has a cape there and everyone needs it cleaned right then and there.
So. And yet there's still continuity anyway because like if you don't read Tiny Titans and you pick this up and you're like, why are there penguins helping Alfred to do the laundry? That's because it's the penguins from Batman Returns who live in the Batcave.
Mm-hmm. It's really cute. If you guys haven't started picking this up yet, what's wrong with you? It's so fun.
Joy condensed.
And Cassius is asking, I wonder what Wonder Woman would think about wearing pink. I think she'd like it.
Yeah, I don't think she'd have any problems with it.
She just has to learn to accessorize. No wearing silver bracelets with a total gold outfit.
Wonder Woman's bracelets are silver!
Why are the bracelets silver?
Because that's what color they are.
I know, but they should be gold like the rest of her outfits. Goodness, girl. So that is it for me.
Awesome.
What a glazed stare on your head there, JD.
You know, I mean, it's a great comic. I just haven't read it.
Right at
Pink Issue.
I mean, I've kind of glanced through it. It's just like, I don't know. Maybe I don't have enough love in my heart.
This year's black.
So. I just don't have enough joy in my life to really appreciate it. All right, McFeely, what do you got, sir?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what I'm not going to talk about is I'm not going to talk about Avengers Academy, even though I know most people expect me to. But that's just because it's as good as it ever is, and everything I have to say will just be more of the same about how good this comic is and about how you should be reading it. This is the end of the first year, and it's the end of the multi-part Return of Korvac storyline, in which, as we can see on the cover here, the Avengers Academy teens get mystically transformed into adult selves. Mm. And they win, and all is good. Some great little moments of character in there. Veel taking a stand, realizing she has to do things for herself. Wonderful moment between Hazmat and Metal to round the issue out. Want to see some more focus on Metal. Just good quality stuff all around. So
now,
if you're not really
do you still have into the bag, or is it the cover that shiny?
That was in the bag, yeah. Oh,
okay. I was like, wow, that's one shiny cover.
The light was shining. Here we go now. Avengers, number 12.
I'm picking this up now.
No, you have to talk about last issue, I guess.
Yeah, okay. On Tuesday, Brian Michael Bendis tweeted, Avengers 12 comes out tomorrow, or as I like to call it, whiny internet babies are going to owe me an apology. Now, reluctantly, I have to grudgingly agree. Last issue was not good. No, it still wasn't good. It was 12 pages of the Kingpin Watcher talking purple, 22 pages of Fat Watcher talking purple prose, which only just sort of insulted whenever Thanos popped up at the end. And the Watcher said, this is Thanos, because the Watcher said it was Thanos. And then this issue starts, and the Hood has a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 5, I can't count. 5-page conversation with Thanos, in which Thanos is written as the rather dim, overly verbose character that I fully expect a Thanos written Bendis would be. In which he says, give me the gem, and the Hood goes, no, and Thanos goes, no, seriously, give me the gem, and the Hood goes, no, and Thanos goes, come on, give me the gem, and the Hood goes, no. And then...
That's pretty close.
It turns out it's Doctor Strange in disguise! It's not even Thanos!
Damn you, Bendis! For
I was like, god damn it, where does my rage go now?
Apparently it goes into the Hood's face as you turn the page. But, you know, and I hated it because it's like the only reason I picked this up was because of that tweet. He tricked me into buying this issue. Not only that, but then I have to say that he's right.
Yeah, I must admit that like, well, hang on, we'll talk some more about the issue before I can find a conclusion. It's like, you know, Doctor Strange tries to bargain. You know, it's like I read some discussion as people like, I wonder if this was better. Say, people saying, like, is this Bendis just writing Doctor Strange pretending to be Thanos, or is this how Bendis would write Thanos? And, you know, it's Bendis dialogue, so everybody has a tendency to sound the same. So Bendis's Thanos is Bendis's Doctor Doom is Bendis's Loki is whatever. It's just all the epic long words, no use of contractions, you know, stuff like that. And it just read exactly like I would have expected a Thanos Bendis to sound. But, you know, Thanos, whenever the Hood isn't taken in by the deception, Doctor Strange reveals him and he says, well, we'll take them from you by force. And the Hood says, how do you plan on? And then just right behind him, like, Hulk with a power gem. Oh, son of a...
Man, just... Wow.
Oh, God. It's like, these are the moments whenever John Romita Jr. is earning the paycheck on this book.
Yes. Beautiful.
I mean, it's almost like his brain is exploding out of the back of his head. It's not, but the impact is whammy.
Yeah.
And he drops the gems, so the Avengers swoop in and manage to grab two of them. But the Hood gets his hand on the reality gem, and then there's this rather cool, like, three pages where the Hulk chases the Hood through, like, fluctuating realities all around them. Again, really nice artwork from Romita. You can really feel the characters stumbling clumsily through reality as it changes from Marvel Zombies to House of M to the Ultimate Universe to the Squadron Supreme, just stumbling around and around and around. But the conclusion is basically exactly as you expect it from the cover, in which the Hulk sleight of hands, the power gem to... or maybe Iron Man uses the other gems to get the power gem out of the Hulk's hand. And then the reality gem leaps of its own accord from the Hulk's from the Hood's hand into Iron Man's grip, because Iron Man has built him, well, hasn't built a gauntlet. Iron Man has the Infinity Gauntlet, because we saw this. I went back this week and actively decided to look at the New Avengers Illuminati miniseries again, just to refresh my memory on how that all went down, because that was where we first learned the Illuminati had the gauntlet and the gems. And it's a pretty cool, like, sequence that ends it all, where the Hood says, like, you know, yeah, so what? It's not like you're not going to do what I wouldn't. You're going to get power whatever way you can and make the world fit the way you see the world fit to be. And he lectures Iron Man. And Iron Man has this really, like, introspective speech where he talks about how I can create a world without war. I can make a world without alcohol or drugs, without hate or jealousy. Then it wouldn't be the world we live in. Nothing would be learned. Nothing would be gained. We wouldn't advance as a species. In fact, I bet we'd devolve. I could make the world a technological paradise I know it one day will be. I could see my father again. I could bring Janet back. But being such a rich hypocrite, I'm only going to do two little things. And then he pushes the Hood right back into jail, and the Hood gets a big no moment, which is really terminally satisfying after these last 6 issues. Then Iron Man uses the gems to wish the gauntlet and the gems out of existence. And Steve Rogers invites the Red Hulk to join the team, which I'm surprisingly less resistant to now after these 6 issues as well. Because I was not happy at the notion, frankly, whenever it was first announced, like 6 months ago or whatever. But 6 months later, he's been palling around with him, and Jeff Parker's been doing some decent stuff with him over in the Hulk book, showing how General Ross is really attempting to win back the trust of his government, trying to do something for a world that no longer has any place for him in it. And I'm not as averse to this concept now as I thought I would be. Yeah. And then, let me just pull myself up. I had slumped in the course of...
McFeely's on the move, watch out!
I had slumped in the course of... in the course of the show. And then, spoilers, we Uh-oh. Got a final... Am I echoing?
No.
No.
I hear something in the background.
I'm just giving you crap.
We get the final scene where it turns out Iron Man, that shifty bastard, did not, in fact, wish the gems and gauntlet out of existence. Just teleported them away to another location where the Illuminati gathered to take the gems and hide them once more. 6 hands reach in to take gems, but there are only 5 Illuminati members left. So who is number 6 now? Spoilers! It's Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
I genuinely didn't expect it.
No. Who did they lose?
Black Bolt.
Oh. Is he dead?
No, he's off. He might be. He's either dead or in space or both.
Oh, okay. Dead in space. Awesome. Okay.
Cosmic books. That's pretty cool.
And they even made the reference that he couldn't really wish it out of existence. Most likely it would find some way to exist
also,
still.
When I revisited the Illuminati miniseries, Reed Richards actually tried to do the same thing, and it actively didn't work. So I was reminded, hey, look, continuity. But, it's like, overall, it's a surprisingly solid conclusion to an arc that really felt like it had gone off the rails.
So they've tied up a lot of loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think on the whole, this arc definitely comes in a distant second to the first arc. I mean, I was really on board for this arc and the first couple of issues because, my head is in a different place, re the Red Hulk, no. But when it started, just seeing the Red Hulk getting himself pasted was... massively entertaining. And I enjoy the Hood, so it was nice to see him back as well. But as, you know, as the six issues have gone on and it's just been an extended scavenger hunt with a bunch of fruitless fighting, you know, and the idea of the Illuminati being exposed and seeing where that would go, you know, that was interesting. That happened, like, what, two or three issues in, and then there's nothing came of it up until this issue. So, you know, it's a solid conclusion that ties off most of the things that it established and doesn't quite make up for the last issue, but definitely addresses and at least counteracts the worst elements of the previous issue.
Yeah.
And it's also the conclusion is all about opening up Steve's mind as well. It's like he's actually agreed to be with the Illuminati and to hide the gems this time because he's been forced to understand that there are some things that people at large can know about, because if they do, this is what happens when they do. And as the new Nick Fury, this is a lesson Steve really needs to learn. So, you know, it's you know, I can just generally say I'm solidly content with the resolution of that, where I really didn't think I would be. So, you know, I guess he was right.
It hurts me to say that, though. I was like, I was going to be a smartass. Like, I really wanted to tweet back. I'm like, well, if you're wrong, can I have my money back? Because I'm going to buy a freaking issue. And then it's like, he was right, and it was good. And damn it.
Damn, yeah. It actually turned out to be, yeah. So, yeah, there was that. Now, I read nothing else this week that I haven't talked about. So what I'm going to talk about is nothing else new. What I'm going to talk about is now for my second thing is something a little bit different. Something I did also read this week. Had it a couple of months, but got around to reading it this week. It's also Bendis, funnily enough. It's Bendis and Michael Avon Oeming's original graphic novel, Takeo.
Hmm. I've heard them talking about that.
Yes. This is a story about, this is an all-ages graphic novel. It is roughly the equivalent of a four-issue miniseries. You know, about 80, 90 pages, thereabouts. Yeah, that seems about right. It's a hardback, and it is $9.95. So, cheap.
Wow.
Yeah, worth your time. It is the story of two young girls, Taki and Olivia, who are... It's a very... It is the consummate origin story. Little girls, home life is driving them nuts. One's a teenager. One's only, one's becoming a teenager. She's 13 years old. She's becoming a woman. And one's 7 years old and their mother's overprotective. So they have to hang around together at all times. She's losing her head. The younger sister is oblivious to the whole thing. And when they go over to one of the older sister's friend's house, it's just at the time that her crazy mad scientist father is throwing a fit after having been dropped by his evil scientific research company, and he smashes open an evil device that he has invented, causing a big old power surge, which of course, through the magic of comics, gives them radioactive superpowers. And the graphic novel is them discovering that they have powers, figuring out what to try and do with them. Of course, the girl's father, the friend's father, comes after them because, you know, he thinks like, hey, look what my research did. And he believes he can use them to try and get his job back or better his life. And then, of course, they have the falling out with the friend because they won't help ruin her, help fix her shattered family. And they must be superheroes, for truly it is the only choice. It is the consummate origin story. It is a very good, solid, standard origin story that you could really see being just turned into like a 90-minute film. It hits all the solid classical superhero beats, so it's very fulfilling in that sense. But at the same time, it's very open, and there are future stories to be told here, and I'll definitely check them out.
Does it read like a manga or manga? I don't know how.
It reads the only way a Bendis comic does, which is like a Bendis comic. They do have that very fast talking. Well, you know what is the phrase on the back here? Fast talking, whip smart graphic novel series, sure to thrill fans of Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man, and it is full of Bendis-y dialogue, you know. But most of the comedy definitely comes from the younger sister Olivia, because she is, of course, she's the comic book reader. She's the one who embraces the notion that they have powers, that they have that they have to do something with them, and is just constantly delighted when she finds out new ways to use them. And their superpowers are, by the way, Kung Fu Telekinesis.
What?
How do you have Kung Fu Telekinesis? How is that different from regular telekinesis?
I'm not exactly sure, because they're careful to use it.
Okay.
McFeely just used Kung Fu on himself and his earbud, apparently.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the older sister tries to punch a dumpster and nearly breaks her hand. And then the younger sister... and just karate chops the dumpster, and that works for some reason.
So sort of like Superboy's tactile telekinesis, I guess.
Seems to be more a state of mind than a Kung Fu telekinesis. And then the little sister has a very consistent habit of going, "Oh yeah, uh-huh," whenever she figures something out. Kung Fu telekinesis!
Huh.
It's a lot of fun. It is certainly one of the more innocent and less, you know, world-weary, bitter Ultimate Universe-style things that you could expect from Bendis. The thing that jumped out at me, and the thing that actually caught my eye about it, really, is that this is... sometimes I get asked, it's a rarity, admittedly, because comics, but every so often I get asked, you know, what's something good for a girl? And if it's a teenage girl, I'll say Runaways. And if it's a young reader, I recommend Tiny Titans to anybody of any age, but that's always always a go-to for a young girl. You know, this is going on the list for something that I would easily recommend to a young girl reader who wants to try and find something to get into. There's definitely a broad, wide gender appeal here for the youngins. I mean, I was a little cautious about it at first because I will read to you the first sentence on the back of the book here, which is, "Two sisters in a multiracial adoptive family are driving each other insane." Now, that should set off a few alarm bells.
It sounds like sitcom.
Regarding the dangers of tokenism, that really should set off a few alarm bells. So it is quite refreshing to discover that not once does this come up as any kind of issue in the course of the book. I don't think race is mentioned anywhere aside from the fact that the older sister's skin tone is perhaps slightly darker than the younger one's. And the idea of adoption is brought up maybe once, you know. So much as when I read that on the back, it set off much the same alarm bells as Marvel's repeated insistence on marketing Aranya as the first Latina heroine, even though she wasn't, and even though it had nothing to do with the actual content of the comic. That always sets me off if I hear that in marketing, because it's like, just let it be what it is instead of trying to push things that it isn't about. And that is not what it is about. So, you know, it deals with the concepts of, you know, therein it's a single parent family as well. So, you know, I don't think you could get any more tokenistic buzz phrases in here. Multiracial adoptive single parent family. Which, the height of that, well, of the way that factors into the plot is they really don't want to tell their mom they have superpowers.
Wow.
So that is something else and something unusual I read today. Very solid, consummate origin story that I'll definitely recommend for children of all ages, but I think a good one for little ladies as well. And would look forward
for
to seeing some more of it.
It sounds like you're getting a pretty good deal.
That's why I got it, basically. I mean, the idea was Bendis. You know, the art is also by Michael Amon Owing, who's the artist with Bendis on Powers. So, you know, it's the freaking creative team of Powers producing an all-ages graphic novel. That's weird enough in and of itself. It is a Marvel production. It's through Marvel's Icon imprint, which is the creator-owned imprint where Kick-Ass and Superior and Nemesis were published, and where Powers is published. And the idea caught my attention, and for $10, absolutely worth it. Go check it out.
Do you know if there's going to be another volume coming out?
They haven't solicited anymore, but I would say if this has enjoyed any level of success, that I would like to see more. I certainly enjoy seeing more, and I will check more of it out. Yeah, recommend it. Takio.
Nice.
And
that sounds like some highlight.
Nice.
Yes, I think it is. I think so.
Cool.
Well, I think that's it for
comics. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, but well, that's Smallville.
But yes. So, we sort of on the show, have been talking for several months that Jeff Johns was writing an episode again for Smallville. For those of you who don't know what Smallville is, it's Superman before he's Superman, basically. It doesn't take place in Smallville.
It used to be.
It used to be. Now it's just an endless cock tease. Well, actually, it's not endless. It's coming up in like three.
Yeah, it's coming to an end.
I was going to say, it's finally going to happen.
Three episodes left. He's finally going to put the cape on. And this, I think, is a little bit of a turning point in this particular issue for that. I think this manages to be the episode where I think Clark finally kind of gets it. That he doesn't have to be a behind-the-scenes kind of guy. Why it's important for him to have the Clark persona and what this yet unnamed persona that he's going to adopt is going to be. I think he's getting the idea he's going to have to drop the blur and become something else. And,
let us stipulate, though, that we have specifically only watched this because Jeff Johns wrote it and Booster Gold's in it.
Yes, most
not
importantly,
Smallville viewers.
I gave up on Smallville
a while ago.
I have to admit that I am a Smallville viewer now.
Jeff Johns is going to be in it. We drop back in.
Right.
We checked out Absolute Justice. We talked about that last year when it aired.
Right. I started watching Smallville starting last season, so I have to admit that I am a Smallville watcher now, although I haven't watched the whole series through, but I have seen all of this season. So.
But they had this magical two words for you.
Booster Gold. Right? Yeah, there were so many good little bits in this episode. Just of different stuff that they did that I thought was pretty cool. The story-wise, at the beginning of the story, I don't know, there's some sort of back and forth. Clark's still trying to figure out. Lois is trying to get him to adopt this Clark persona. Clark being a bumbling, sort of klutzy, glasses-wearing guy that, you know, that is sort of forgettable. So that when he becomes the blur or whatever, he can actually show his face and people aren't going to put the two together. So it's kind of funny, though, because it's sort of establishing that concept of really, you just put on glasses and then people don't recognize that you're the same guy, but whatever. That's what we're doing. That's the world Superman lives in. So, So in the middle of that, though, he starts to hear there's another kid that's shown, and he's sort of like klutzy or something as well, and he ends up like getting out in front of a car, and as the blur is about to like rush in and save him, someone else shows up, and it is Booster Gold. Yes, so sweeps in, does a lot of pointing, smiling, you know. I mean, I have to say, I can't remember the actor's name, but I have to say that like. He nailed
Booster. He really did.
For early Booster. I think, I mean, like, that's not Booster now in the comics. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're a current reader of Booster, that's not Booster. If you go back to, like, that Volume 1, the early Booster days, nailed it. I mean, spot on. But he comes in with his, you know, force field and, like, stops the truck and saves the kid and flies off. And, he ends up having this whole like hotline number to call, and he's really hounding Lois. He wants Lois to do the story on him. And what comes out over the course of the episode, I'm going to talk about the episode, not so much about what actually happened, but you know, he's trying to get the interview with Lois because he feels like if he gets the interview with Lois, then he's going to get the jump on Superman, and he'll be christened as the, you know, as he likes to call himself, the Man of Gold from Metropolis, rather than it being Superman, the Man of Steel. Well, while this is happening, the truck that he stopped was carrying equipment from Cord Industries.
Woo!
Yes, so tie in there. And it was carrying a Blue Beetle scarab, which managed to walk its way out of the car and get into the kid's backpack. The kid is Jaime Reyes. Yeah.
Wow, a lot happened in this episode.
Yeah. This is the first 5 minutes.
So, yeah, I mean, this was just like the beginning of the episode. But as the episode goes on, the scarab, like, attaches itself, but it doesn't fully manifest. He actually goes to Booster for help, and Booster basically tells him to take a hike. And a couple other things, like, Clark ends up being sort of jealous, I guess, of Booster. I think he's jealous of his persona, jealous of him being way out there, and... you know, taking a lot of the spotlight. But, I mean, like I said, there's just a lot of little elements that are fun. They even mentioned Dan Garrett as being, like, the first one to, like, wear the scarab.
It's a very nerd-happy, you know, casually dropped references to Steve Lombard and Ron Tripp on the Daily Bugle staff, mm-hmm. Clark running into a phone booth to change his outfit,
yep.
Dan Garrett, Ted Kord.
Yep.
Okay, I mean, I'm looking up who played Booster. His name is Eric Martzloff.
Yes. Now, here's...
And why didn't I watch this? Holy crap, is he good looking.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is that he used to, I don't know if he was roommates, but he's really good friends with the guy that plays Green Arrow. So, and I think that's part of the connection that kind of landed him the gig, maybe. But, I mean, he, you know, I read
it. Look for it, that's for sure.
I mean, he definitely has a look for it. Now, one of the things, I don't want to say it was disappointing, because the element was there. I mean, Skeets was there in persona, but he wasn't the flying robot thing. He was just like an onboard AI.
I mean, I don't know if you did, but the reaction I had was like, what's about Skeets? He was like, absolutely, sir. And I was like, where's Skeets?
Yeah.
I was looking all around the screen going, where
is he? But, you know. So
I was like, oh my God, Skeets is in it. Where is he?
But I think it, I mean.
Oh no, they did it. I mean, it's, you know.
For the Smallville universe, it works.
You know, it's not even so much a question of the Smallville universe, like TV budget. But after 10 years, I figured Smallville's effects would look not shit. Funny that.
Yeah, I mean, because even Booster flying off was a little like, oh, that.
Oh my didn't... God, it's like, yeah, you can't get flying. No wonder you haven't fucking done it in 10 years.
Yeah.
If you can't. If that's what it's going to come out looking like.
Yeah,
Booster. My God.
But, I mean, but story wise and stuff, they had it spot on. They mentioned his gambling history. I mean, he talked about being from the 25th century, like, and having the.
Jeff Johns being super. I mean, this, you know, for all the changes that Smallville has made to absolutely everyone else who's ever been in it, ever, Booster has made it completely unscathed in every respect. One of the benefits of time travel. But it's just pure Booster.
I really
got this down nicely.
I mean, even his costume is basically what I would expect a Smallville version of Booster.
I mean, that's even, but it's so much beyond what you would have expected a Smallville Booster to be. It's practically his costume minus the headpiece.
The full headpiece and being one set.
Yeah.
Well, see, I'm looking at his costume right now. It actually looks fairly well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
do you remember when we were joking about a high school letter jacket
with a
big B on it? You know, that's Smallville Booster Gold, really.
Yeah. Especially older Smallville, for sure. Maybe not so much current, but... now, Blue Beetle... I mean, that kind of became more of a Monster of the Week sort of thing.
Yeah, that was, you know, I would say, like, if they were to do any future episodes where he got a hold of it, they'd probably, like, streamline it down so he looks less menacing than he actually did. I mean, I think that was probably a pretty deliberate choice, even if it was achingly obvious that the dude in it couldn't move for help.
No, it was bad. But I thought that was a nice moment, though, for Booster, because at the end, Booster has to kind of talk Jaime down and, you know, get him to understand that he can control the scarab. And there is sort of a hint that he's going to be helping Jaime now. And so, I mean, it definitely even almost establishes a potential for a spinoff.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure that's what
they're shooting for. Okay, let me ask you a question here. I'm looking at a still from last night with him and the Blue Beetle. Is the guy in the Blue Beetle costume, did he look like he can move around okay? That costume looks really bulky.
No, he really couldn't move. I mean, there was some CG involved with the Beetle.
Oh,
but
okay.
I think at least when we were seeing it from waist up, that was a dude in a suit, and he really was just moving it.
It doesn't look very comfortable whatsoever.
No. And that wouldn't be practical, I think, week on week. I think they would come up with something that would be...
streamlined.
Yeah. But, I mean, for the show, it kind of worked. And I think that... I mean, like I said, I mean, you can't... For all the stuff that they've screwed up with other characters and stuff coming in, I mean, Booster was just spot on.
Perfectly. The Skeets is the only one who lost anything in the translation. And that's part budget, part...
And all
you know, Smallville is not a world where somebody can have a little robot flying around beside them anyway.
No. It's too contemporary to be able to do that yet. I mean, I think that would have really tipped Booster off as being from the future, you know, and
that too,
and being out of time. It's funny,
as someone who's not a Smallville watcher, though, I look at this. Now, this is two episodes before the finale.
It's
two episodes and then the finale, right?
I think there's three more episodes
to the series. This seems like a bit late in the game, frankly.
Well, I think
it's like they have an. I mean, and this is just as somebody who doesn't watch it, but like they got an ongoing plot with Darkseid, who still hasn't appeared yet. Who I have, you know, been trying to read things about, and which, as far as I can see, hasn't really got very far. And
no,
then it's just much like Justice Society, a giant press of the pause button to. Jeff Johns guest episode.
This at least fits into the world, though, in the sense that, like I said, the deal with Booster is that he came in and he's showing Clark, look, you can have your face out there. You can be a public figure and still help people. And that's, I think that's something that Clark needed as far as the way the series is going. He's been really apprehensive about showing his face, about being out in the open. And I think that this episode helped establish a reason for him to say, look, you can be out in the open and be a hero, and it's, those two things are not bad things.
Now, as this episode began, there was the implication that his picture had been taken or that some kind of public appearance had already occurred. Is that something that had happened in a previous episode?
There's a couple of times where his picture has been taken as the blur. So it's becoming more and more likely that as he does more and more things, and they've known this, that his picture is going to be taken, he's going to be seen, he's going to be pictured. And so and he saw himself in the future, and he knows that in the future he does the glasses and slouches and all that stuff.
Oh, right, okay.
And so he knows that that's coming, but he still wasn't convinced as to why he needed to do that. And I think that this helps establish him and say, no, it's okay.
Tom Welling is no Christopher Reeve when it came to that. No. It's that scene where he was trying to play nerdy when he was talking to Ted Kord. It's like...
I
get the approach of what they were trying to do, but it seemed like it was an awful lot awfully quickly. It seems like that's something that you can't really just cram into three episodes before the end.
Kind of been doing it, but not
as
much.
And it makes me wonder even if it would have happened if Jeff Johns hadn't been writing the episode, you know?
No.
Because it's a very Christopher Reeve, very Superman, secret origin-y, just the references to Steve Lombard and Ron Troop, who Jeff Johns brought back during his Action Comics run and who he included in Secret Origin. It's a very fan-friendly, Silver Age-y, Jeff Johns-y, Christopher Reeve-y concept that makes me wonder if it would have been a part of it if this episode hadn't happened, like if it's a concept they would have invested in, gone into at all.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they're definitely trying to move him into that more, you know, Clark Kent essence. But yeah, I don't think you would have seen all of that kind of stuff.
So is he returning next week?
Who?
Booster? Oh, no. This is it.
Oh,
he's
that's bad for Booster.
No, it was a one-off for him. No, next week we get Zod again.
Back to. Oh, no. Not seriously?
Yes! Yes, someone's been releasing people from the Phantom Zone, and now he's in this big gladiator thing that's being overseen by Zod. So we get Zod back.
We know how McPhilly feels about Zod.
Yeah, I do too. I'm done
with
Zod.
You know, I have nothing against Zod. It's just the fact that they've just let it go.
They've overused him.
It's overused. Yeah, and I mean, it's like Zod was so done last season. Like you said,
but
Smallville does this, right?
Like, who doesn't Zod?
Like they just rush to the end, and now they're doing it again. It's like they got a whole other episode they're going to waste on Zod, and then they've got three episodes to try to wrap everything up with this dark side stuff, which they haven't even mentioned in like four episodes. They mentioned it, but
not been confirmed at this point. Michael Rosenbaum is coming back for the finale.
Yes, that has been confirmed.
I believe I will probably watch the finale.
So,
just because.
Do you think the finale is only going to be 1 hour?
No, it'll be 2 hours.
Oh no, it'll be a double.
It's a 2 hour finale. What they did.
Money's still on Darkseid, possessing either Lex or the Lex clone and not looking like himself until the final
seconds
whenever Clark punches him in the suit into space.
There was a bit of a preview. It looks like he's almost got some cybernetic stuff on him.
So, wow.
Yeah. On Lex. So.
Oh, still okay, Lex. Right?
Yeah. So I don't know. But maybe not.
You meant Darkseid.
I don't know. But we'll see. Like I said, it's coming up pretty quick. That's just another couple weeks and that'll be over. So, but otherwise. Good episode of Smallville. Great stuff for Booster.
Surprisingly not dreadful.
And that was directed by Tom Welling as well. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I just saw that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Didn't pay attention to that bit.
Yeah, so I thought he did a really nice job directing it as well. I mean, he's not going to be able to do any work after the series, you know, on camera.
Yeah.
So it's really important for him to, you know, hone those skills. But yeah,
I wasn't big on Erica Durance as Lois Lane when she started, but I'm not averse to it now, I must say.
No, and writing wise, I mean, like I said, I love this Lois. Like she's a good, strong, powerful female character that's not, you know, constantly screaming for help or in duress or so stupid that she's always getting herself into trouble. You know what I mean, it's like,
well, that's what the best Lois Lane should be.
Yeah, but most of them are, you know, girls tied to railroad tracks and things. So,
not really.
I've never been a fan of Lois.
So, yeah. I wasn't either until this. So, anyway, so there you go. Smallville and the show as it is on Zombie Jesus Day. So. again, a few things to mention. We are on Twitter at fanboyversus.com. There's also the at TF Radio. That is the Twitter account. So at fanboysvs, at TF Radio for those. Check those Twitter feeds out. You're going to get show updates. I'm going to start putting news and stuff out there. We'll also give updates when we do sparring editions, which is our individual comic book reviews or reviews or things that we're going to do for Fanboy Versus. Those will be on there as well. Check out comicnewseye.com. We are posting over there. I finally posted the last show over there. So we are posting the show over there as well. That we get lots of good news and stuff from them. So check them out for your comic book news as well. Enjoy that. We'll be back next week with Brightest Day ending. And that'll be exciting. So, and we'll be back to full cast as well. So that's
it. I have a plug. Before we go.
Go for that, sir.
Want to plug this week an interview I did over on the Moonbase 2 podcast. Yes, plugging the rivals. Me and Dave, Kyle L. Prime, got the chance to sit down with voice actor Jack Angel. I raised it on this show because he was Flash and Hawkman on the Super Friends. So there is relevance for me to bring it up here. And it's an hour and a half interview, and it is awesome.
Nice.
It's really good. I listened to it today. It was really fun.
Oh, it's so good. He is 80 years old. He doesn't give a crap, and he is so frank and so candid. Your mouth will just drop, and he's got fantastic. Yeah, like every question dances off into three different tangent war stories or stories from his past. It's a great listen, so go and do that.
Awesome.
This show.
Check that out. So, very good.
Cool. That's at fullmetalhero.com is the Moonbase 2 podcast's new home. All on word, fullmetalhero.com. You'll find it to download there.
Very nice. So, and for the quick link to us, it is fanboyversus.com. So, all together, one word. But anyway. Okay, well, hey, well, thanks again so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for joining us. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.